101.7 FM 710 KEO, Micah McCarty on the Jack Spring Electric Newsmaker Hotline. Keith Carter, owner of the Louisiana Rougarou. I love that name, Rougarou. Joining us, Keith, good morning.
Good morning, good morning, good morning, good morning. How is everyone?
Well, we're doing great. Thank you for stepping up and coming on and answering some questions. A lot of people have questions about the request of the Caddo Parish Commission for the Rougarou for over $30,000. And one of the things that that wasn't answered was, what is the money going to be used for?
Well, it's a great question, and I was kind of out of pocket yesterday and the day before, and I appreciate you guys giving me an opportunity to come on this morning, even though the app's not working and we're listening to it old school. You'll get the radio one way or the other. So I got to drink coffee in the car this morning and listen to the radio. So
I saw you at the mayor's luncheon yesterday, but I didn't get a chance to get over and holler at you.
Yep. I had a really great barbecue plate. So sorry I didn't get to see you and Miss Erin. Hope everything is going good with you.
Tell us about this funding request and what this money will be used for.
So the entire premise is, I've got plenty of time to go and want to go back over what we're doing with the Louisiana Rougarou. But the Louisiana Rougarou, the only professional sports program here in Northwest Louisiana, and it started last year over as the Shreveport, and it played at the Hirsch and got an opportunity for the guys that owned it, involved it, to kind of get out of arena football and get out of town, and had an opportunity and talk to my wife and my family and a lot of people, including yourself and everyone else, wanted it to stay, wanted it to be here. I didn't have owning an arena football team in my bingo cards anytime soon, but here I am. And so it's kind of been a labor of love, and we've brought this organically together with a large group of employees and staff and volunteers. And the ask is for us to get a public-private partnership to help fund activities, marketing camps, youth assemblies, to get our professional football players that each have a story of some kind into the school systems, starting in Caddo and the city of Shreveport, to after school programs, into nonprofits, and get the support that we need. This was an opportunity and a funding source through economic development to spur the local economy to get kids to be able to come to the game by giving them tickets, by supporting their assemblies, by supporting marketing efforts, either on TV, radio, print, to get the word out about our 7 home games. We have 4 left here, where we're playing, how we're playing, what the rules are, and what the kind of players we have coming in town to lead this team.
Now, this is a professional football team. The players are all paid. What's the average salary for the arena football players for the Rougarou?
It is not much. It's going to surprise you. We're in the National Arena League. So the National Arena League is set like the NFL. It's a nonprofit league, and it has 9 team owners, and we're on the board. Actually, on one of the other 2 owners and myself are on the executive committee. The National Arena League is owned by all 9 team owners. It's just set up like the NFL. So we actually have a not-for-profit National Arena League program. Owners like myself in the company is Louisiana Rougarou LLC. We're a sole proprietor. Myself and my wife Kim, we own this 100% ourselves. We've got 50 or more partners that have bought suites and tickets. And
so wait, get back to the question. What do the players make?
To tell you, the NAL has a salary cap of $65,000. So we pay around $6,500 a game, spread out over the 25 players that we have on our roster.
Okay.
So you can do the math. It's around a couple of $100 a game, and we provide them living, a place to live, a place to work out, a place to go, and they participate in community events. Sometimes these players have to have part-time jobs, but this is not something that is NFL-level pay. We have a salary cap of that.
Let's clear some things up. Were you part of the ownership of this team last year?
No, I was not. I was an investor. I got taken for more money than anyone else did. These two guys came in with a promise. You met both of these guys. I think they're on your radio.
Sure.
They're on TV. They came in with a promise and an idea, and I invested in that. And I did the media on it. I was the local guy. I was excited about it. I was bringing in partners, bringing in partnerships. When I started getting notified that they were not paying their bills, they were not doing good deals, their checks were going bad, I reached out to everyone and will continue to reach out to everyone, and had an option of not doing this at all, taking my loss, taking my lumps. But a lot of people, including my family, we didn't want to fail at this.
And I'm looking at a business card, though, Mr. Carter, that says March 2025, Arena Football. It says Keith Carter, owner.
Yep, that they actually made that for me. I invested in the owner's group. I never was the owner of their company. They controlled all the assets, the checks, the credit cards. And I can promise you this, there's probably a lot of people, or there's several people out there that they did deal with that I don't think anyone ever knew that they didn't get paid or did get paid. I have no idea. That's them, and they need to take it up with them.
Okay. There was also a mention that the Bossier police jury was waiting on Caddo Parish to act on funding for you. I spoke with Ken Ward, the administrator of the Bossier police jury. He said there's nothing pending before his group for funding for you guys. Have you asked the Bossier police jury for money, or will you be doing that?
Yes, I think so. I think we rewind a little bit. Back in October, November, January, December, January, I went to every working meeting of Caddo Commission, Shreveport City Council, Bossier City Council, and Bossier Parish Police Jury to introduce myself, introduce our schedule, tell them what I'm doing and what I'm dedicating from a grant. And I actually have been petitioning out to all of these quasi-government agencies, nonprofits that get government money, and the governments themselves to ask for assistance to support economic development here locally. If we can promote it locally, then we can get people from out of town coming. We spend a lot of money and a lot of staff to promote nationally for people to come into the Shreveport Bossier, Northwest Louisiana. So, yes, I personally went in front of every single body and asked them for our unity in community package. And you can ask them that. I gave 50 tickets at a very discounted rate with no fees or anything. I would absorb all those for them to take this to their constituents. They could use governmental money. They could use nonprofit money, their own personal money, to buy ticket packages for their constituents to come to games. These may be people that can't afford to go to games or can't afford to go to games, but the only way local sports makes it is through tourism dollars of people coming in to see it. The only way that you can do that is to get the local involvement. That's what stage we're in right now. If no one comes to Arena Football game, it can't self-support. Well, it sure shouldn't be a social net of survival, and it can't be government run or supported. But just like everything else, when we talk about economic development, we spend a lot of money, public and private, for economic development, but we don't spend a lot of time and money on economic retention. So to get our kids involved in this is going to retain their talent in Shreveport, have sports entertainment here, have professional athletes in the schools and assemblies. And if the government has economic development money that they will spend on companies to advertise or to come into town and then leave with our money to do different things, then maybe we can allocate a little bit for the local people that are trying to do things here good.
Mm-hmm. We're talking with Keith Carter, owner of the Louisiana Rougarou. Keith, can you hold on the line? We've got to take a quick break, but I've got some more questions.
Absolutely.
Thank you so much. Mike and McCarty, 101.7 FM, 710keel.com.
Stories of the day with Mike and McCarty on 101.7 FM and 710 Keel.
Owner of the Louisiana Rougarou, Keith Carter, on the Jack Spring Electric Newsmaker Hotline. Keith, in the Caddo Parish Commission meeting, there was a statement that said that the Rougarou has 241 employees. How many people are on the payroll?
And we're back on?
Yes, sir.
Yes, we're back on the air, yes.
Oh, okay. All right, great. 241 is probably a pretty strong number. You got to remember we have 35 players on our camp roster, dropped down to 25 on our travel roster. We dress out 21, 10 coaches. I've got 10 staff. And then we have probably 100 that work in and around the Brookshire Grocery Arena, from athletic trainers.
But those aren't your employees. Media. They work for the Brookshire Grocery Arena, don't they?
Well, they would not be employed if we didn't have a game there that night.
Okay, but your players aren't full-time. That's not a full-time salary, obviously. So for them to say there's 241 full-time jobs, that was a little inaccurate, yeah. I believe.
Well, and you know what, though, Aaron? There'd be zero jobs if we weren't doing that. So the question really lies in what are we doing and how are we doing it and what do we need help doing? Mm-hmm. Because when I talked to you about this last year, about 6 or 7 months ago, we were on the show, I think one of my other companies, we were talking about there's nothing to do in Shreveport. Nobody wants to worry about. Kids don't have anything to do. There's no sports that stays. There's sure. no, you know, the idea is to try to actually do something. And I think I mentioned to you at one time, Mike, on one of our phone calls, we were talking about, you know, Theodore Roosevelt, man in the arena. Well, the team this year has taken the motto of man in the arena. It's the actual doer in the arena that gets all the criticism if they do or they don't. And the criticism is so strong, but the actual people doing stuff is so light. So I am the man in the arena. If you'll go to YouTube, you're probably going to see our documentary series that we've actually talked to Wade that with the Film and TV Commission down here. We are trying to work with Visit Shreveport-Bossier, the sports commission. What we're actually trying to do is get an arena football documentary based in Shreveport-Bossier around what we're doing ourselves organically.
Cool.
Those are some of the things that everything has a trickle effect. So Ms. Aaron, when you talk about how many employees there are, well, today's payroll, and I have to go in today and pay everybody and pay all the bills. But my Treetop Entertainment is 6 people. I have a football operations just to run the chains, the footballs, the clock, the scoreboard. That's 12 people. There's 5 other 6 referees that come in nationally to referee our game. All those people at Brookshire's, that's a rental charge. Those people work for Legions Global. They do a wonderful job. But all the concession stands, security guards, security checkers, ticket checkers, all those people have to be paid within the contract. So the contract is organic to where the more people come, it can pay for itself. Mm-hmm. So the goal is that you should not have any outside support, but most everything has to have seed money and help. And if there's one way to do that in economic development, when you look at economic development and the amount of money, man and woman hours we spend on sending people out into the country to promote Northwest Louisiana, we have to have things to promote.
If you don't get this money, do you leave? Do you shut down if you don't get this $32,000? What happens to the team if they say no?
No, ma'am. Because the $32,500 is the number that we wanted to try to get from all the agencies to promote our organic piece. And that's 2 things. Marketing and being able to get our players into camps, leaving football at assemblies, talking to kids, and then being able to give them the tickets. So what you said yesterday, I will agree to that. If Caddo Commission approves $32,500, I'll absorb everything. I'll have 50% of the cost, and I will sell those tickets at $10 a piece. Your $1,000 you committed to put to yesterday, and you said you had another 10,000 people to go with it, we will use that for all tickets for anybody that needs mm-hmm. Title I tickets, low-income tickets, high-income tickets. We need to get the youth and the people in Shreveport-Bossier into this arena. It doesn't matter if it's 100 yards into Bossier City or Bossier Parish. Most all arenas are in different places. Where did the Texas Rangers play for the last 40 years? In Arlington. Where did the Dallas Cowboys play? In Arlington. The location of the arena shouldn't be a problem for the solution of our community.
Keith,
really want to unify the community, this is an idea that you can do this around foot. Just in 50 miles of Shreveport-Bossier, Mike, there is 10,000 kids involved in football every year. This is the only professional sports team this side of the New Orleans Saints and the Dallas Cowboys.
Let me ask you a question.
Do it different.
Keith, let me jump in, because I do think it's important, as you're aware, this community is gun shy of sports organizations. But I do think it's important that you're not coming in fly by night. You're a business owner in this community. You're from here, if I'm correct.
So my dad was a banker in North Caddo Parish all of his life. My mom's a school teacher for 40 years up at Herndon. I went to Blanchard and Northwood and left right after high school to go to Northeast to LSU, and I met my high school sweetheart. We got married. We've been back here 25 years. I've lived in Shreveport and Caddo Parish. Both my children went to school here. They're both at LSU now. I've owned Always Best Care for 13 years. I've been a paramedic and ran helicopter programs for the last 25 years. I went to Caribbean Medical School on a hope and a dream, and I provided for my family. This was something that I stepped into as an investor because I thought it would be a great idea and give something to do. And every time I go out to meetings and I go out to hear stuff, it's always nothing to do and how terrible this is. And I remember speaking to Keith Hightower when he was running for office and Bobby Jindal when he was running for governor about what they were going to do in Northwest Louisiana. And just last month, and I think I maybe saw you guys at the Chamber of Commerce, and I went up and shook Billy Nungesser's hand. I said, Lieutenant Governor, my name is Keith Carter with the Louisiana Ruru. And his eyes perked up. He said, I've heard of you. I want to help you. Turned and gave me his personal cell phone number on a card and said, I want to bring a Louisiana seafood bowl up to one of your games. I'm going to give you money, but you got to get Northwest Louisiana together so that I can help you guys.
I'm getting a couple of comments about the past ownership and wanting me to ask you, will you pledge to pay all the bills that you owe if you get this money from the parish, or if you're not, you're going to, there's a bad taste in the mouth from some of the people that are owed money from last year's team. Are you pledging to take care of the bills that this team incurs?
I ask them, have they talked to me about that? Because if they haven't, I'd love to talk to them and figure out a strategy. It's just like any other business. It's very hard for me to commit to pay bills on what contract they made with somebody else and what that bill was. But I would definitely look at it and I'll bring it to light because sunshine solves everything. And I'm not hiding from anything. That's why I got on your radio today. And that's why I don't mind going on 3, 6, and 12 if I need to. But we're going to spend so much time on what was instead of what could be.
Right.
And that's probably a major problem.
Well, a lot of times what was affects what could be, though, as you know.
Yeah, it does. It does. And, you know, we all are armchair quarterbacks after the fact, but nobody really wants to roll their sleeves up and do the work that it takes to be successful. I am. That's why I'm on this radio. I heard the vitriol yesterday, and I totally understand it. I listened to your Caddo commissioners. I totally understand it. I totally get it. And so the answer to the question is, if the Caddo Commission is a private company money, I don't want the money. I don't need the money. I don't need the money for anything but economic. We could come up with
a plan. It's not for hotel rooms, as was mentioned by Mr. Atkins?
No, ma'am. It's not for hotel rooms. It's not for hotel rooms. We had the Dodge City, Kansas, Southwest Kansas team that drove in. They got 20 hotel rooms. They brought they had another 20, 30 hotel rooms. It's about 50 hotel rooms just directly affecting us. This has nothing to do with hotel rooms. It has nothing to do with any money that I need to pay for anything. I don't even want public money written to Shreveport Ruguru LLC. We'll come up with a plan. If it has to be written to Town Square Media for us to have an ad on your morning show again, we'll do that. That's fine for me. Mm-hmm. Commercial on any of the TVs, that's fine. Our print media, our glossies. I want to get the word out that this is a good thing for the community, and there's finally someone in the community that actually cares about that.
Chris,
because my goal is to be budget neutral. So the answer to your question, if we want to use this money for tickets for the youth, and I will accept your challenge, Aaron, from yesterday. Mm-hmm. I'll use all of that money to provide tickets because you said you put in 1,000, you had 9 other people put in another 1,000. That's 10. That's 12. 32.5. I will meet you halfway and cut 50% off of all of my fees on that, and I'll eat 50% to get twice as many tickets for you, and let's get some kids in the seats. And after they get done with this game, if you have one child or one adult that was not positively affected by what we're trying to put on the field, even though it's at Brookshire's Grocery Arena, I'll give them their money back.
Mm. Now, Keith, we got to wrap up. We're way behind time. Yep. Are you going to be at the commission meeting tomorrow?
I can. I've got an event first thing in the morning. You know, I'm luckily I wrap myself around some really great people that are experienced in arena football and experienced in public affairs, and they do the work of the Rougarou. I also own another business that takes up all my time. This is not something that I'm coming into town to do. This is something that I, being in town, so I didn't want to try to do it because I didn't want it to fail, and I didn't want the people that got their black eyes for doing business with people that carpetbagged in town and did the wrong thing. I didn't want that to be the legacy or me be associated with that. I'm trying to do it right. Anybody that you talk to on your message board, Ms. Aaron, mm-hmm. I ask them if they have my number. I guarantee you they do. And then let's reconnect on that communication, and I want to help solve everything because y'all know me. We've talked personally. I'm not trying to do this for any reason, but to give back to the community, to have a legacy that's positive here.
Keith Carter, owner of the Louisiana Rougarou. Look, we're pulling for you. We hope everything works out. Thanks for jumping on with us.
Thank you so much.
Mm-hmm. 101.7 FM, 710 Keel, Mike and McCarty.
Back with more of Mike and McCarty on 101.7 FM and 710 Keel.
I don't know why I'm kind of amused at these reports that say Julia Letlow refuses to debate, mm-hmm. hasn't committed to debating. And this is the complaints are coming from other candidates.
Of course, yeah.
Well, the polls that I've seen, the most recent polls, she doesn't need to debate.
Right, I know. It is pretty standard, though, in U.S. Senate races that you debate the incumbent. You try to take them down. But you're right. She doesn't think she needs to.
She doesn't. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So why?
But is that a problem for you? Is she good at, you know, answering questions? Is she going to get it? I've texted her people many times. Crickets.
Really?
Crickets.
Yeah.
Does she not want to answer hard questions? Does she just want to have, like, you know, throw her stuff out there like she wants to and then try to get in the runoff? But, you know, I think maybe if she gets in the runoff with Fleming, she might be in trouble.
Interesting.
If she doesn't debate Fleming, she might be in trouble. You know, Cassidy's got a ton of money. There are a lot of people saying he'll be in the runoff. He's going to make the runoff, whether you like it or not. He's got a ton of money. He'll make the runoff. So we'll see.
Whether you like it or not.
Yep.
101.7 FM, 710 Keel, Mike and McCarty.
Let's get back to the show with Mike and McCarty on 101.7 FM and 710 Keel.
We got the report yesterday of the, it was kind of, I won't say sketchy, details were sketchy,
mm-hmm.
about the murder apparently it began at Planet Fitness.
That's what they earlier said. I don't know if that even is the case.
I don't think so either.
The two men knew each other. We now have been told that by police, correct?
Right. Yeah. And they had had previous, and it said that they... It was, let me get to that, because I've got this story on keelnews.com.
And they had one man was dead at the scene, and they had taken another man into custody, but they had not charged him yesterday. They were possibly charging him.
Well, and then it turns out the man that they took into custody, who did the shooting, allegedly, mm-hmm. did the shooting, he's the one that called the police.
Right, and we say did the shooting, they both shot.
Right.
Both people shot at each other. He shot second. The guy they took into custody shot second. Is that right?
He's claiming self-defense. The guy who ended up dead, the defendant says, no, he attacked me.
And I fired back. I returned fire. Okay. Well, it's an interesting story. I'm sure there'll be more to follow. We don't have any names yet, but he's not been charged with anything, correct?
No, and the police say that he's the one that called, and he is fully cooperating.
Okay.
And so, yeah. A lot of times it's not what you think.
Right, exactly. And we said that yesterday. Probably right. Way more to this.
Details are kind of sketchy,
mm-hmm.
but it was the fourth forth. So is that a homicide then?
It's a homicide. It's not a murder.
Okay.
It's a little different wording, but
so
yeah.
It's the fourth homicide mm-hmm. for 2026.
Yep.
But we're still, we'll talk about that because that's, we're on track to have a better year.
That's a good thing.
That is a good thing. Caddo Parish School Superintendent Keith Burton going to join us after the news top of the hour, 101.7 FM, 710 Keel.
Breaking news and trending talk with Mike and McCarthy on 101.7 FM and 710 Keel.
Yep. Oh, bless you, Reuben.
Bless you, Reuben.
The other day, you mentioned you got a pineapple.
I did.
And you bought a whole pineapple.
I had to cut it myself.
And so, and I've got like a pineapple, it's a corer.
Yeah.
And it.
Are you the only one in America that has one of those?
And it peels it.
Wow.
It goes down.
The last time y'all have used it?
Well, it's been a while. But
Dina
does. No, she buys whole. I love pineapple.
Okay.
And she buys, you know, the whole pineapple, and it works really well.
Well, I couldn't get my pineapple pre-cut like I normally get it because of the water outage. When we were under a boil advisory,
that's right.
Grocery store said we can't cut your pineapple for you because we don't have water. Where they use it to rinse and all that.
So you did cut it because I was going to bring you my corer.
No, I cut it up.
Okay.
And that's one of my lazy habits. Now I have a new one. I have a new lazy habit. Went to my doctor yesterday, primary doctor, and we're talking about, you know, food and things to, because it's real important that I eat in the morning when I wake up. And so I had been in the habit of going to Waffle House, but I was realizing I was spending $250 a month at Waffle House because I'm a heavy tipper.
Waffle House.
I'm a big tipper. I like to leave a $20 bill on a $12 check. So that's, if I was doing that three times a week.
Good gosh.
That's $60 a week. You do the math. So I realized I can buy the eggs and I can buy the bacon and I'm good to go for, you know, $20 a month.
Now, not a $20 tip. You're just leaving a $20 for your whole check.
Yeah, an $8
tip. I
got
you. Okay.
An $8 tip on a $12 check.
Okay.
Still a big tip. They love me when I come in there. I mean, they take good care of me.
Yeah, but you know what? Good service, I'm the same way.
And they work at Waffle House. I feel bad. So I heavy tip. Anyway.
And they're working.
Exactly. The overnight shift, for crying out
yes.
loud.
Yes. They're so going to work.
Got to talking with the doc yesterday, and I said, look, the last few days I've just been boiling eggs. I'll put eggs on the pot. I'll go get my shower. I'll brush my teeth. And then come back and the eggs are ready. Good to go. Peel them. Take them in the car. I'm good to go. She goes, have I got something for you? And I said, what? She said, do you go to Sam's Club? I said, well, I'm not a member, but I have friends that go, and I'll go with them occasionally. She goes, they have a big pack of pre-peeled boiled eggs. Yes, they do, Reuben. Don't
All
laugh.
Right. Wait a minute.
Don't laugh.
Wait a minute.
Cage-free boiled peeled eggs.
They've got them at the Walmart here.
Do they really?
I've actually bought some.
They have a pack of 24.
Okay.
They're packed two eggs to a little pack. They have them individually packaged, two little pack, and you buy 24 in a, and it's about $10 for 24 eggs.
That actually doesn't seem bad.
Think about the time you save. Who hates peeling eggs? Raise your hand. Hate it.
Okay, I've got a trick.
How
by
lazy
the way.
Am I?
I've got a trick.
Okay.
If you take an egg and hold it upright, I want to say the large end at the top.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Take maybe a wooden spoon, and you tap the top of that egg.
Yeah.
Just not heavy. You don't want to crack the egg.
Okay.
You can hear that inner
membrane
release from the shell.
Ooh.
Tap, 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 and you hear a...
And they're easy to peel.
And then boil it.
Oh, then boil it.
Yes. Before you boil it. Tap the top of the egg, and you'll hear that
That's
membrane.
That's bogus. That's so bogus. I'll try it.
I do it.
I'll try it. I do put ice on them after I boil them. If you quickly put ice on them, it makes them easier to peel too. But heck, I don't need to peel them now. They sell them at Sam's.
Okay.
Unreal.
I've actually bought at the Walmart here. I bought a pack. Not 24 of them.
I'm doing that. I'm doing the 24, and I'll just eat. She said, if there you eat three eggs a day, I'm good with that.
Bucks. I don't know that that's...
Exactly.
That's...
Exactly. You get that? Yeah. I'm too funny.
May not now, but scheduled to join us after the news, top of the hour. Mike and McCarty, 101.7 FM, 710keel.com. Seven FM, 710 Keel, Micah McCarty on the Jack Spring Electric Newsmaker Hotline. Caddo Parish School Superintendent Keith Burton joining us. Keith, good morning.
Hey, good morning, Mike. How are you and Aaron?
Doing very well, thank you, sir. Tell us about the disciplinary committee pushing a new agenda forward to change some school. What are the new discipline measures that we're looking at?
This was a committee that meets throughout the year to make really to dig into any changes that they see needs to be made in policies. We know as new challenges come up for schools and parents and principals, then we need to be reflective of that in policies. And many times we just need to clarify the language so that it's, again, easily administered across all schools. And so that's what happened yesterday. It's a committee made up of, we had a school board member, we had principals, we had counselors, teachers, parents there, and they discussed, they looked at our cell phone policy again, really clarifying what does a school day mean. Does that mean when the bell rings, when the student arrives on campus? So they clarified that. Then they really got into looking at suspensions and expulsions. What is an adequate amount of time for a family to appeal if there's been a suspension? Also, what flexibility there is for principals or our district for expulsion versus a suspension. And then a big one that really needed a lot of clarification was around vaping, because we know vaping is something that unfortunately is a major challenge with teens today. In the past, it used to only deal with vaping with tobacco and nicotine, but now, unfortunately, there are just so many controlled substances, THC, that are finding their way into those vapes. And so we really wanted to make sure that we were aligning the consequences appropriately with the substance that was being used.
And the vaping, it seems like it could be so easy to hide now, because you're not, you know, the old smoking in the boys' room, lighters and cigarettes and, you know, a lot of smoke. But now with these vape, these little devices, it's very easy to hide and use.
Yeah, and of course, technology's grown a lot. We have vaping awareness devices in the bathrooms that will alert the administrators if vaping is occurring in the restrooms, which is very helpful. But you're right. I mean, they are getting smaller. Mm-hmm. They are getting more, unfortunately, just the substances themselves are getting stronger. And it's a real challenge. And so, you know, we know the very first thing to do is make sure there's good education out with teens, making sure they know the challenges around those, making sure that parents are aware. But our policies have to have, you know, they have to reflect common sense. And so, you know, if we've got a student who's using a normal vape versus someone who's using a vape that has THC in it, there should be some differentiation in consequences.
Let me go back to the cell phone you mentioned. You said we need to determine what does the school day mean. Under this change, what will the school day mean? Will it mean, you know, till you're off our campus? What is this committee decide?
Yeah, what they are recommending, and by the way, you know, what they are addressing is revisions they would like to see the entire board consider in a change of policy. So recommendations will come from this committee, and what they are recommending to the board that the board will vote on in April is the school day is going to be as soon as that student arrives on that campus, whether it is 7:15 in the morning or 7:55, as soon as that child is on the school bus, doesn't matter. As soon as they are on school board property, the restrictions for cell phones in.
So no cell phones on a school bus?
That's right. I mean, they have them, but they have to be put up just like they have to be in a classroom. Now, we know if there is an emergency that certainly, you know, they can contact parents. We want to make sure that it's appropriate for, you know, if they've got to get in touch with parents, absolutely. But we also, you know, if there's an argument or something going on between two kids, we don't want five cell phones coming out videotaping that and then posting it on social media and causing an issue. And so we wanted to make sure that, again, we were just defining what the school day was. When is it appropriate on campus and on buses? And so they've really kind of eliminated any confusion about those enforcement windows through the policy.
And at the end of the day, I may have interrupted you, it's until you leave the campus or get off the school bus, correct?
That's correct.
Oh, wow.
Absolutely. And let me say, I mean, there's really nothing that's changed about that. We just, because that's how it's been enforced, we just wanted to, again, make the policy cleaner, continue to refine it. And if there's not a principal, a teacher, and I'm telling you, 80% of the kids would say it's been one of the best changes we've made in this state is addressing mm-hmm. cell phone usage and instruction. I mean, it has helped discipline. It's helped comprehension of content. It has helped across the board and really impacted students successfully.
That was what I was going to ask, if you've seen positive results. And so you just answered that question. And I'm glad to see that.
We thought it was going to be a monster to enforce, but right. It was not. No, I mean, it really wasn't. Of course, we had to deal with the speed bumps right during implementation at the beginning. But it has really changed the culture, especially at the middle and high schools. But and when you talk privately with students, they tell you themselves, you know what, it really is nice to get away from them. So it's definitely been something that we are excited about.
It just reminds me of that study from years ago about the children on the playground. When there was no fence around the playground, as a general rule, the children clumped in the middle of the playground. But once a huge fence was built around...
Yeah, I forgot about that, yeah.
They mm-hmm. were all over the playground. They felt safer. They felt more comfortable. They need restrictions. Mm-hmm. Children need boundaries.
Yeah, absolutely.
Can you hang on with us? I want to talk about possibly privatizing more schools in Caddo.
Yes.
Okay, cool.
Caddo Parish School Superintendent Keith Burton, Mike and McCarty, 101.7 FM, 710 Keel.
Back with more of Mike and McCarty on 101.7 FM and 710 Keel.
Caddo Parish School Superintendent Keith Burton on the Jack Spring Electric Newsmaker Hotline. Keith, we know Fair Park is operated by a company called Third Future. It's privatized. Linwood, they operate Linwood. Is there discussion on other schools also going private or being operated by a private company?
No, those came, the Linwood came from the Recovery School District. It was not under Caddo Parish control before. It was under the RSD control. And Dr. Brumley and Bessie made the decision to move it from the RSD to Third Future. And their contract extends through 2032. Now, Fair Park is one of our schools that is now being run through next year by Third Future, and we will begin conversations with Dr. Brumley and the state regarding the return of that school. And really, one day I hope to also have Linwood back in Caddo Parish. But, you know, one of the things to note is this year we have not received any applications for new charters in Caddo Parish, which tells me they know that, first of all, we're offering a good product in the district, but also that we have enough choice options available for families, that charters really, they're not healthy in our environment. You know, they don't necessarily see the need as they do in Orleans and other parts of the country where charters are flourishing at a much higher rate.
So we don't have any schools right now that there is discussion about possibly privatizing them with Third Future or anyone else?
Not that I'm aware of. And we have, of course, I speak very frequently with LDOE, with Dr. Brumley. There, matter of fact, I mean, I think he is very pleased with our work in the district. We grew again last year. We are making great strides in the areas that, you know, for many years have been challenges for us. He's really pleased and says, you know, quite frequently that especially our high school redesign work is almost a state model. Our pushing students into internships and giving them opportunities to expand their, you know, their experience during their high school. So not at this time. Again, there's been no formal applications and there's been no discussions with the district, the school board, or LDOE about any expansion locally.
Do we still have, and the reason Brumley stepped in, I believe, is because we had some of those schools were considered failing. Do we have some schools that are still considered failing schools in Caddo Parish?
Yes, we do have some that are very close. Matter of fact, you know, we celebrated this year Atkins that had been a failing school and had been, you know, the school really most people talked about as far as state takeover for years. It had been almost a dozen plus year, almost 15 years. Of being in failure, and this year we pulled it out. They are no longer a failing school, and so we are aware of those that still aren't meeting our mark. What means more than anything else is ensuring there's a high quality principal there. There's high expectations. There's no doubt we're providing the support.
You still there?
Did we lose you?
Uh-oh. Call him right back, Ruben. You still there? Or did you go in a tunnel? He went in the tunnel under the Red River. That's the Red River Tunnel. Is he in the tunnel?
Hey, did you hear it?
There you are. There you are.
You
were in the Red. You were in the Red River Tunnel.
Support.
Oh, I'm sorry. Well, I'm.
So, how many do we have that are still failing?
I don't have that off the top of my head.
Okay.
And get you all of that information. We have reduced that number by approximately 40%. You know, when you're looking at, and the reason why I'm hesitant of giving you that is now with a new change of accountability, the numbers that are on the top of my head, they're proposed letter grades, and then they are the actual letter grades. So okay. Let me give you what the truth, because I don't want to give you incorrect information off the top of my head.
Gotcha. Now you, is there any, are we in jeopardy of Brumley coming back and saying, hey, you still have these failing schools. We need to do something different. Or do you think he's confident that we are on the right track? You said, you know, he's been pleased. But if he still sees a list of failing schools that are still on that list, in jeopardy at all of him stepping back in?
I would say no. I mean, I think we are aligned with, first of all, our priorities are perfectly aligned with the state priorities. He is very pleased with how we are funding our schools. He is very pleased, and, you know, the data is showing what we are doing is working at all levels and with all types of students. Matter of fact, I was just speaking yesterday to a group of potential superintendents around the district and, you know, was able to lay out plans where we are showing in the past few years, we've not only improved school growth, but we've increased the performance of those that are in poverty. We've increased our special ed performance. We've increased all of those subgroups, whether it's EL students, English language speaking students, non-English language speaking students, and across the board. We are making gains with all of those areas. And so I don't think there's any, instead of us working against each other, I think he's really seeing, but based on the changes that we're making, that his attempts is to work with us. And how can we either, further accelerate the growth that we're seeing in the district?
Well, it sounds like we're going in the right direction. Mm-hmm. And congratulations, Keith. We appreciate your work and efforts.
Well, it's not me. I want to tell you, we've got, of course, a board that's very supportive, and also the work and hats off goes out to the staff, the principals, the teachers, paraprofessionals, bus drivers, all of those who show up each and every day. Very, very appreciative and honorable of them.
And I appreciate that, but it starts at the top, Keith, and we thank you, sir.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate it.
Always. Mm-hmm. Talk soon.
Coming up in about 10 minutes, State Senator Alan Seabaugh going to join us. He's proposed a bill proposing stiffer penalties for solicitation of prostitution. We'll hear what he's got to say in about 10 minutes. Mike and McCarty, 1017 FM, 710keel.com.
Back to the show with Mike and McCarty on 1017 FM and 710 Keel.
State Senator Alan Seabaugh offering up SB 199, offering stricter penalties for solicitation of prostitution. We'll get him to explain that. Coming up just after the break, Mike and McCarty, 1017 FM, 710keel.com.
Now more breaking news and trending talk with Mike and McCarty on 1017 FM and 710 Keel.
On the Jack Spring Electric Newsmaker Hotline, Senator Alan Seabaugh joining us. Alan, good morning.
Good morning. How are you all?
Wonderful. Thanks for joining us. SB 199, offering stricter penalties for solicitation of prostitution. What was the impetus, if you will, for proposing this bill?
Well, first of all, there's a lot of bills coming through the legislature that are putting mandatory minimum jail time for certain offenses. Stephen Jackson, Representative Jackson from Shreveport, brought a bill last year that enhanced the penalty for certain solicitation or prostitution offenses, made second offense a felony going forward. But at one point, a mandatory minimum jail sentence was in the bill, and then it got taken out. This is one of the things that we're trying to put it back in. There are, one of the problems with the legislature is that we almost never get anything right. We address things, and it's usually a compromise. And usually what comes out at the end of the day is close. We addressed the issue, but we didn't get it exactly right. So I have probably half of the bills that I have filed this year are cleanup bills from previous legislation that passed that needed to be tweaked a little bit. And this is one of them. There are multiple bills working their way through. And this was addressed by the several DAs and contacted me. And it's a constant fight between DAs and judges. Certain DAs actually, unlike Caddo Parish, actually prosecute people. And they are worried about judges giving people a slap on the wrist or giving reduced sentences. So mandatory minimums are coming back. We moved away from them 10 years ago or so, and they're coming back. So there's multiple bills this year putting a mandatory minimum jail sentence for certain crimes, I guess to prevent judges from letting people out without jail time. I don't think the judges are a problem in Caddo, but in other parts of the state, apparently they are.
So there's a mandatory minimum. Is it now a felony, a second offense?
It is.
I didn't know if it had gone through.
Yeah, Stephen Jackson got that through last year. It is a felony now, but it's not. There's no mandatory jail time.
So what's the minimum jail time for that now?
In the bill, it's 6 months. Obviously, it still has several steps of the process to go through. And the bill is going to be amended. I was contacted by several people that are concerned with human trafficking. They were afraid that the legislation could be used to criminalize people that are being trafficked and are involved in the exchange involuntarily. We made a conscious effort to not do that. And one of the statutes that we were amending is one that some DAs use to prosecute the one being trafficked. And so we're going to try to tweak that and fix that because that's not our intent. The argument from my standpoint is sometimes one of the people involved in the prostitution exchange is involved against their will or involuntarily. But the one actually paying for it is never involved involuntarily. So I'm trying to focus on that to reduce demand, so to speak.
Okay, let me ask you this. When y'all raise minimum jail sentences, we need to talk about more jail space. 14% of the inmates at CCC are state inmates. Is this going to come with more state prison beds? Is that going to be part of the equation?
Well, not specifically in the bill, but yes, we are looking at adding space and building more prisons. The CCC is not supposed to be a place for people that have already been convicted. It is generally a pre-trial holding facility for people that are awaiting trial. The legislation is going to deal with people that are after their trial, they're convicted, and then they become a resident of the, you know, of the state. And you know, the state puts people in lots of places. When John Bell was governor, he shuttered a lot of prisons. Wrongheaded in multiple levels, but we're in the process of reopening some of those. There's several bills to build new ones around the state. So addressing prison space is absolutely something that is on the table.
There's another bill, Alan, that would allow the governor and you guys to remove incompetent DAs and judges. That scares me a little bit, because what if John Bel Edwards is governor and he doesn't like a DA somewhere? Do we need to give governors that kind of power?
It's potentially very problematic. I jokingly tell people, I'll let you know whether I'm for it after November 3rd, if I know whether I'm DA. Truthfully, it is problematic.
And you don't want John Bel Edwards having that power, do you?
No, absolutely not. And I don't want John Bel to be governor again, but there's nothing I can do about it, other than vote against him. It's not just the governor. I believe in the bill now, it's a governor and 2/3 of the Senate,
right,
would have to vote for it. So ostensibly, these would only be very egregious circumstances. But you know, it is problematic to involve the governor and the legislature in things like that. The DAs are constitutionally protected, so it does require a constitutional amendment. I think it's a very high bar. I would need to study the details of the proposal very, very closely. Mm-hmm. It's something. Look, problem. We've done a good job with the Judiciary Commission and in giving them a little more teeth and a little better direction in disciplining and potentially removing problem judges. There is really no corresponding group that looks at district attorneys. And we do, quite frankly, have a couple of DAs in the state that aren't doing their job and probably need to be removed. I'm trying to remove the Caddo DA the old-fashioned way at the mm-hmm. ballot box. I don't think anybody can beat the Orleans Parish DA at the ballot box.
That person needs to be removed in Orleans?
I haven't studied exactly what's happening there that much, but from all the chatter I hear, yes, we have two DAs in the state that are problematic at best, at the minimum.
Orleans is one. Who's the other?
Caddo. What's happening in the Caddo DA's office right now? Letting people out of jail, ankle monitors that aren't monitored, just letting things fall through the cracks, not prosecuting violent offenses, letting people out again and again and again. Absolutely needs to be worked at. The best thing I could say about the Caddo DA's office is it's not as bad as Orleans. Other than that, it's really, really problematic, which is why I'm running for DA. So we've got to make a change. If we don't make a change, Caddo Parish is going to continue to suffer, and it's not necessary for Caddo Parish to suffer.
Well, let me ask you about Governor Landry's proposal to replace inspection stickers with QR codes. What's the status on that?
It says, interesting, the bill itself just says replace inspection stickers. So the QR code is not in the bill yet, unless it's Larry Bagley has the bill to replace inspection stickers. And that all it does at this point is replace inspection stickers. Support the idea of getting rid of inspection stickers. The QR code is potentially problematic, and how it's worded is going to be looked at very closely. I can envision a significant problem with giving a potential stalker, kidnapper, somebody up to nefarious purposes, the ability to walk up to a car, scan a QR code, and get the name and address of the person driving.
Or the person owning the car.
That is potentially very problematic. So there's a lot about the QR code that raises red flags. I can't say I'm dead set against it because I haven't seen it. I haven't seen a bill yet. It was just proposed in concept by the governor. And I think on first blush, looking at it, the idea of a QR code, which everybody has a scanner on their phone, is potentially very problematic. And to say, oh, well, we'll only give law enforcement access, that's ridiculous.
That an app will be developed.
Yeah, an app will be developed. It'll be hacked. Passwords leak. I mean, that's not a solution. We'll have to look at the proposal very closely, but a lot of red flags go up, and it's not just me talking. A lot of people are raising the red flag, but the governor has a tendency to pick things that are problematic. He did it last year with his insurance bill and browbeat legislators until it passes, even though I don't think there's anybody that thinks House Bill 148 last year was a good idea, but it passed. Because the governor uses his influence to influence legislators, and I've talked to some people in the House that say he's already twisting arms and using his office to push this. And again, I can't say I'm against it because I haven't seen the bill yet, but it's potentially problematic.
But are Bagley's efforts to eliminate the inspection sticker going to be dependent on this QR code proposal?
That I don't know. I mean, that's what I was about to say. The getting rid of inspection stickers is a good idea.
Yes.
I completely support that. Do we need to replace them? I mean, some states don't have inspection stickers at all. And, you know, what are we going to do with the QR code? Is the QR code going to be somehow tied to the inspection sticker? You have to go to an inspection center station, get your vehicle inspected, and input the data into the QR code. If that's the proposal, I don't think you've done anything. You still have the same process. You're still doing. I think he said it was going to be cheaper, $4 instead of $10 a year. I don't think the $6 a year is the problem. It's the time and effort of going somewhere,
right?
Waiting in line, but you know, going through the process of having the inspection. Like that's what we need to avoid. And if we're still going to have to do that and just have a QR code instead of an inspection sticker, I don't think that should be the goal.
State Senator Alan Seaball, thanks for your time.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Mike and McCarty, 101.7 FM, 710 Keel, and on the free Keel app.
Big stories of the day with Mike and McCarty on 101.7 FM and 710 Keel.
Bad person. Horrible person.
Well, I know that. on this... expound, please.
Well, I found that little news story that you may have heard in the newscast about the couple of bicycle riders found a...
I was going to ask you about this.
They found a safe in the Kisatchie National Forest while they were riding bikes. And inside the safe... I don't know if they busted it open or if the door was unlocked. I don't know. I don't know how they got into it.
Okay.
But inside the safe was some jewelry. You know, a lot of jewelry. They promptly called, I guess they called the p- Police Department or whatever. It's been turned over to the Natchitoches Parish Sheriff's Office, and they're now looking for the rightful owner of the jewelry and the safe to try to get it back to the rightful owner. We're out of time now, aren't we? Look at the time.
What are you, we actually are, 30 seconds. So you're saying...
I don't know that I'd have turned it in. Is that am I a horrible person?
I think that it's situational.
Okay. If the jewelry had initials on it or it looked like a wedding ring or something like that, yeah, maybe.
But also, who's ditching a safe full of jewelry in the woods?
Yeah. Maybe it was thieves right. That found out it was costume jewelry and I got this is not worth anything.
Maybe. Or was it opened?
I don't know. I'm not sure.
And then they found it and then got it home and got it opened?
I don't know.
Maybe the thieves couldn't open it?
I'm not sure. I just know I'm a horrible person. I don't think Natchitoches SO would have ever heard about this safe if I had biked upon it.
I'm too paranoid. I would have thought it was a trap.
Oh, you would have turned it in. Yeah.
No. I wouldn't have touched it.
You would have ignored it.
Yep. I would have thought somebody's out there waiting on me to mess with it.
Okay. Gotcha.
Yeah. They booby trapped that thing.
Yeah.
Cassie Hammett, who has a ministry called Purchased, getting women out of the sex trafficking industry or the sex industry. She's going to join us about this stiffer penalties for prostitution solicitation right after the news, top of the hour. 101.7 FM, 710 Keel. Well, 107 FM, 710 Keel, Mike and McCarty. We talked with Alan Seaball last hour about stricter penalties for solicitation of prostitution. And one thing that you might not think of a perspective is from the human trafficking industry and how this will hopefully positively affect human trafficking. Cassie Hammett, who started the Purchased Ministry, is on the Jack Spring Electric Newsmaker Hotline. Cassie, good morning.
Good morning, Mike. How are you?
Doing very well. First of all, for those listening, explain a little bit about Purchased and what this ministry is about.
Yeah, so Purchased is a ministry of the Hub here in Shreveport, and we have programming and outreach to women who are experiencing sexual exploitation, who are actively in the sex industry. And then we also serve identified victims of sex trafficking here in the region.
And you work with law enforcement and you work nationwide, isn't that right?
Yes, we do. We have incredible partnerships here in the community. We brag about the partnership network here that is all working together to identify victims. So we do work with law enforcement, and we have really good friendships there. And we do have locations all over the country now.
What do you say to people who say, and I know you hear this, so I'm not ignorant, so I know what you're going to say, but you hear it all the time. Prostitution's a victimless crime. Why is this such a big deal? Please address that.
Yeah, so that is a really common myth or misconception about prostitution. There's a lot of thought that, well, if they don't want to do it, if women don't want to do it, or if individuals don't want to do it, they just shouldn't do it. But the reality is that there's a lot more behind that behavior than a lot of people know. Often those who are adults experiencing exploitation through prostitution, those adults might have been forced into that when they were 13 or 14 years old. And it's very, very common that the behavior we see when someone gets arrested on the news, that behavior was something that was built in their life by other people's choices. And the truth is that whether someone is choosing it or not, outright choosing to be involved in prostitution, is that no person is a commodity or a product. And so anytime someone is purchased in that way, it does create a victim, because the reality is that we're all humans with value and dignity. And so that is a very common misconception and one that we're trying really hard to raise awareness around.
Cassie, I'm one of the things, unfortunately, obviously, there is a demand. When you say started in the sex industry, 13 and 14 years old, that's just so disturbing to me. But there's a demand. Are there any efforts to address the demand?
Yeah, so it is a supply and demand equation when it comes to both the sex industry and human trafficking. You know, often people think that those two categories are very separated, meaning I can participate in solicitation and not be participating in human trafficking. And while practically that may be true for a behavior, the truth is both of those things are directly tied. The demand for prostitution, the demand for buying sex is directly tied to the industry of sex trafficking. And so, the demand part of it, what we're doing at Purchase, and we're super proud of this work that we've been doing with the DA's office in both Bossier and Caddo, is that we've been working for about 5 or 6 years to address the demand side, because the truth is that we do really deep work on the side of victims and women who are wanting out of that. But if we don't ever address the demand, this problem will continue to balloon, because Shreveport, unfortunately, is a place that people come to for this type of behavior. And so 5 or 6 years ago, we started working in the community. We do a monthly cyber patrol that disrupts the buying of sex as it's happening. That's designed to present a barrier to a person that is going online and purchasing another person. When they call the phone number thinking it's the person they're purchasing, one of us answers. And that's quite a shock. But the reason we do that is it's called poisoning the well. Essentially, if you call enough ads in our community, and instead of the person you thought you were purchasing answering, it's a group of volunteers who are telling you the complications and the implications of your behavior, that well is getting poisoned, and you have to stop and think, is this a real ad or am I about to call that group again? So we've been doing that for 5 or 6 years. We also work with the DA's office for something called John School, which is for first-time offenders to attend a class that teaches them the connections between the solicitation behavior and human trafficking. The hope of that is to create better information for people so that that also lowers that buying behavior.
I've got a great idea for stopping the demand.
Yeah.
Let me put it out there. John School, give me the names. Let me put the names out of everybody that has to go through John School. They will stop the behavior.
Right.
Is that public?
And, you know, depends on if the Inquisitor runs it or not. but yeah, in this town, it's kind of hard to not get on the Inquisitor if you get arrested. But, you know, the minimum sentencing will help. It is not the only answer, obviously. There's, in order to address exploitation and sex trafficking in a city, you have to take it from every angle. And I think something that will be helpful is if there's a little bite behind the repercussions, because truly there really isn't right now. And so, you know, if you're looking at jail time versus a fine, that isn't going to stop everyone. But I am going to tell you that our work with those who are being arrested for solicitation, what we find is that if there were better barriers in place for that behavior, a lot of those, especially first-time offenders, would probably begin to reduce that behavior.
Well, I would just urge you and your group to get with the DA or whoever and send out a monthly email of everybody that had to go to John School. And if that was a regular thing, folks, the media would publish it. I sure would.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. And John School is a choice. So one of the things that's complicated is it can't be mandatory. And so it's only those who choose to participate in it. And so, yeah, I do think that.
And I would think that would be a low percentage.
It is a low percentage. It's not zero. You know, we do have people participate throughout the year, but it is. And I just think that if we could raise the consequences, you know, the argument is that it would affect negatively women who are in exploitation. And I think that, like I said earlier, you do have to think about it from every angle. And the truth is that right now there's a way tougher penalty for people who are arrested for prostitution, which is the supply side, than there is the demand side. It's just lopsided. And when you do research, you know, across the country, around the world, you see that there are ways of sort of evening out that legal response that does create incentive for people to not participate in that behavior because of the fear of jail time, because most people don't want to go to jail. And so, yeah, it would be incredibly helpful at least to create a sense of understanding that, hey, in our community, we take this seriously. And I think that that's the bigger thing. I don't think it's going to fix everything. But the truth is that right now, Shreveport is a place where people go to participate in this behavior because the rumor is you will not be held accountable. And so I think that if people thought about Shreveport, man, don't go there because you're going to get busted and you're going to face jail time.
Well, Cassie,
I think that would go.
Let me ask you something that you said that's also disturbing. Shreveport is a destination for this type of activity. I don't think a lot of people realize that.
Yeah, well, our position on I-20, any city that's along I-20 with people traveling, that's going to up your numbers significantly. When we talk to those that we're serving, they tell us that that is the reputation. It's not as much of a destination as a Dallas or a Houston or Atlanta, but any city that is not taking seriously this kind of thing, what happens long term is it becomes the reputation that it's easy to get away with.
Right.
And so you're going to drive 30 or 45 minutes to cross the line into our city because the reputation is, I've done this before there. They don't take it seriously. There's no repercussions besides a fine or something, a slap on the wrist.
Well, hopefully,
and
this legislation, like Alan Seaball has proposed, maybe this will start putting more teeth into it, as you say.
Yes,
Kathy.
Hopefully.
Cassie, thank you so much. We're against the clock, but we appreciate you jumping on with us, and we hope to talk to you soon.
Totally. You guys have a good day.
Thanks. Thank you. Mike and McCarty, 101.7 FM, 710. Keep.
Back with more of Mike and McCarty on 101.7 FM and 710 Keel.
Brought up a good point, because I was like, why don't they send us the names of everybody that signs up for John School, and we just publish those names?
Right.
That would deter people from soliciting prostitutes.
But the problem is John School, as Cassie was telling us, is mandatory.
It's not mandatory.
No, that's what I mean.
Right.
It's not. It is voluntary.
It's voluntary.
The John School is voluntary.
So if they knew their names were going to be out there,
then nobody would sign up.
Nobody would sign up.
And then they're not getting the help that they need.
That's
the problem.
Yeah.
If it were mandatory.
Yeah. Give me the list.
Absolutely.
I don't want to hurt, you know, impacting the demand. I don't want to hurt that.
Right.
But I think if more attention were focused on the people who do solicit prostitutes,
that's
whether you're a public figure, you own a newspaper, you're a lawyer, who it doesn't matter, whoever you are, your name needs to get out there. And I mean, we all know that John Settle, who owns the Inquisitor, has been arrested for soliciting prostitution. Why was he the only one that was focused on? There are so many.
And prominent people.
Yeah, and they keep those hidden.
I've heard many times, oh, you'd be surprised. You'd be surprised.
Yes.
At who?
We need those names out there. If we put the names out there regularly, they'll stop doing it. You would hope.
Well, maybe it would slow it down.
You would hope.
Yeah.
You'd hope you wouldn't have second offenses anymore, or third offenses, or whatever it is. I would hope.
Caddo Parish School Superintendent Keith Burton spoke with us about some possible changes in school disciplinary actions and the reasons thereof. Hear what he's got to say in about 10 minutes. Mike and McCarty, 101.7 FM, 710keel.com.
Back to the show with Mike and McCarty on 101.7 FM and 710 Keel.
Caddo Parish School Superintendent Keith Burton breaks down new disciplinary changes coming into Caddo Parish Schools and the reasons why. Right after the break, Micah McCarty, 101.7 FM, 710keel.com.
Now, breaking news. news and trending talk with Mike and McCarty on 1017 FM and 710 Keel.
FM 710 Keel, Micah McCarty on the Jack Spring Electric Newsmaker Hotline. Caddo Parish School Superintendent Keith Burton joining us. Keith, good morning.
Hey, good morning, Mike. How are you and Aaron?
Doing very well, thank you, sir. Tell us about the disciplinary committee pushing a new agenda forward to change some school. What are the new discipline measures that we're looking at?
This was a committee that meets throughout the year to make really to dig into any changes that they see needs to be made in policies. We know as new challenges come up for schools and parents and principals, then we need to be reflective of that in policies. And many times we just need to clarify the length so that it's, again, easily administered across all schools. And so that's what happened yesterday. It's a committee made up of, we had a school board member, we had principals, we had counselors, teachers, parents there, and they discussed, they looked at our cell phone policy again, really clarifying what does a school day mean. Does that mean when the bell rings, when the student arrives on campus? So they clarified that. Then they really got into looking at suspensions and expulsions. What is an adequate amount of time for a family to appeal if there's been a suspension? Also, what flexibility there is for principals or our district for expulsion versus a suspension. And then a big one that really needed a lot of clarification was around vaping, because we know vaping is something that unfortunately is a major challenge with teens today. In the past, it used to only deal with vaping with tobacco and nicotine, but now, unfortunately, there are just so many controlled substances, THC, that are finding their way into those vapes. And so we really wanted to make sure that we were aligning the consequences appropriately with the substance that was being used.
And the vaping, it seems like it could be so easy to hide now, because you're not, you know, the old smoking in the boys' room, lighters and cigarettes and, you know, a lot of smoke. But now with these vape, these little devices, it's very easy to hide and use.
Yeah, and of course, technology's grown a lot. We have vaping awareness devices in the bathrooms that will alert the administrators if vaping is occurring in the restrooms, which is very helpful. But you're right. I mean, they are getting smaller. Mm-hmm. They are getting more, unfortunately, just the substances themselves are getting stronger. And it's a real challenge. And so, you know, we know the very first thing to do is make sure there's good education out with teens, making sure they know the challenges around those, making sure that parents are aware. But our policies have to have, you know, they have to reflect common sense. And so, you know, if we've got a student who's using a normal vape versus someone who's using a vape that has THC in it, there should be some differentiation in consequences.
Let me go back to the cell phone you mentioned. You said we need to determine what day mean. Under this change, what will the school day mean? Will it mean, you know, till you're off our campus? What does this committee decide?
Yeah, what they are recommending, and by the way, you know, what they are addressing is revisions they would like to see the entire board consider in a change of policy. So recommendations will come from this committee, and what they are recommending to the board that the board will vote on in April is the school day is going to be as soon as that student arrives on that campus, whether it is 7:15 in the morning or 7:55.
as soon as that child is on the school bus. Doesn't matter. As soon as they are on school board property, the restrictions for cell phones in.
So no cell phones on a school bus?
That's right. I mean, they have them, but they have to be put up just like they have to be in a classroom. Now, we know if there is an emergency that certainly, you know, they can contact parents. We want to make sure that it's appropriate for, you know, if they've got to get in touch with parents, absolutely. But we also, you know, if there's an argument or something going on between two kids, we don't want five cell phones coming out videotaping that and then posting it on social media and causing an issue. And so we wanted to make sure that, again, we were just defining what the school day was, when is it appropriate on campus and on buses. And so they've really kind of eliminated any confusion about those enforcement windows through the policy.
And at the end of the day, I may have interrupted you, it's until you leave the campus or get off the school bus, correct?
That's correct.
Oh, wow.
Absolutely. And let me say, I mean, there's really nothing that's changed about that. We just, because that's how it's been enforced, we just wanted to, again, make the policy cleaner, continue to refine it. And if there's not a principal, a teacher, and I'm telling you, 80% of the kids would say it's been one of the best changes we've made in this state is addressing cell phone usage and instruction. I mean, it has helped discipline. It's helped comprehension of content. It has helped across the board and really impacted students successfully.
That was what I was going to ask, if you've seen positive results. And so you just answered that question. And I'm glad to see that.
We thought it was going to be a monster to enforce, but
right.
It was not. No, I mean, it really wasn't. Of course, we had to deal with the speed bumps right during implementation at the beginning. But it has really changed the culture, especially at the middle and high schools. But and when you talk privately with students, they tell you themselves, you know what, it really is nice to get away from them. So it's definitely been something that we are that we're excited about.
It just reminds me of that study from years ago about the children on the playground. When there was no fence around the playground, as a general rule, the children clumped in the middle of the playground. But once a huge fence was built around...
Yeah, I forgot about that, yeah.
They were all over the playground. They felt safer. They felt more comfortable. They need restrictions. Mm-hmm. Children need boundaries.
Yeah.
Idaho Parish School Superintendent Keith Burton, Mike and McCarty, 101.7 FM, 710 Keel.
Back with McCarty on 101.7 FM and 710 Keel.
All right. Last night I set the heater. I still have to have the heater on at night.
Okay.
Although not during the day. It's just we're in that weird era.
Gonna hit 90 on Sunday. It was 27 on Monday. Seriously.
I know.
I just don't get it.
This is why I keep a jacket in my car until May.
Yeah.
I just keep it in there.
And look, I've given up on something, and I don't know if y'all have or not either. The pollen, washing the pollen off the car.
Right.
If I go do it today, well, in a day or two, more pollen.
You know, but I did. I got the 4Runner, cranked it up. And I did. I ran it through the car wash yesterday. It's just covered. And I was like, and we like to have our windows open, especially at night.
Oh, yeah.
I'm not doing it right now.
You can't do that now.
You can't do it because everything in the house gets covered with pollen.
You'd be all stopped up, all sniffly and all that. Yeah.
Kind of did. No.
Yeah. So I think I'm going to run through the car wash today.
Yeah, I did.
And we'll see how long it lasts. A day, maybe 2 days. I don't know. I'm a little bit bummed, but
they offer rain checks if you get rained on within 48 hours.
Okay.
Some places.
What if you get pollened on?
That was what I was going to do. Do you have a pollen check?
Yeah, do you have a pollen policy? I don't think they offer that.
Pollen check.
They lose a lot of money.
They would lose a lot of money. Yeah, absolutely right. Absolutely right. So I'm headed to some sort of car wash today because it's just building up.
When I went over to East Texas, I ran my truck through last weekend, and I hadn't cleaned it in a while. Pulled over into the vacuums, and I cleaned that baby out.
Man.
But then when I got out, I looked at my hood, and I was like, did they even hit the hood?
Oh, gosh, yeah.
And I went back around, and I said, look at that. And they ran it through, no problem.
Wow. You vacuuming all that? Through.
I haven't in a long time.
Well,
I
if you're going to do that, here, take the Bentley.
Okay.
Go get it washed, and you're going to vacuum everything out and
I'll
that?
I'll vacuum it all out
all
for
right.
you.
Yeah, okay.
Might as well.
Don't go far. I got a GPS on that thing.
I told you when I went up to go get some bacon a couple weeks ago, whatever it was, and I got in the car, and it went back.
Oh,
automatically.
Yeah,
went,
yeah.
Oh, this is nice. Then it started going forward. Yeah. Wait.
Yes, exactly. I do have a button if the car gets too far away from where I allow it, like if you go too far.
No,
I
the seat shut, went back.
No, I know, but I mean, if you drive it farther than I've given you permission to drive it, I can shut it off with my phone. Car will just shut off.
Are you serious?
Serious. I'll shut you down. You go too far, I'm shut you down.
Wow.
Cars have some amazing features. They really do. That's why if your car gets stolen, you can turn it off with your phone.
If my wife, if she's like out of town, and sometimes I'll drive her car. I just rotate them. You don't want one sitting for too long. And during the ice, her car had all-wheel drive. It was awesome.
Oh, gosh.
And cool. She was out of town that whole time. She missed the whole thing. And she'll call me and go, did you leave my car unlocked? She gets notifications.
Oh, wow. That's funny.
The car's not locked.
My gosh.
Shut up.
That's crazy.
No, it's locked.
I got you. I'm good. That's funny. That's funny. Oh, my goodness. It's tomorrow Friday?
Oh, hallelujah.
Amen. It really is, isn't it?
It really is.
Cool. Okay.
I know, right?
Cool. All right.
Make it a great Thursday. Mm-hmm. Thanks for spending some time with us. Mike and McCarty, 101.7 FM, 710 Keel.